anything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with Scott Seaton, conductor of the North State Symphony, and with Joshua Haig, the managing director of Uncle Dad's Art Collective. The Symphony and Uncle Dad's are collaborating on a pops concert, performing everything from Star Wars music to Simon and Garfunkel to Daft Punk. The concert happens tonight in Reading at the Civic Auditorium and tomorrow night in Chico at the university's Laxon Auditorium. Also on today's program, we visit the Snidel Gallery in Chico to talk with art experts about the current exhibit, a 40-year retrospective of paintings by one of Chico's finest artists, Sal Casa. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
This is the final weekend to swing on over to the Cascade Theater in Reading for the musical Tarzan, based on the animated Disney film. Those last performances for this production are tonight and tomorrow at 7 o'clock, with 2 o'clock matinees tomorrow and Sunday. In Reading tomorrow, Scottish fiddler Alistair Fraser and American cellist Natalie Haas perform at the Pilgrim Congregational Church, bringing a fresh new sound to Scottish and Celtic music. The concert starts at 8 o'clock. At the Orland Arts Center, Other People, Other Places. The three artists featured in this exhibit have traveled extensively. Their art reflects their responses to the places they have visited and the people they have met. Meet this trio of artists at a reception going on right now at the center and lasting till 7. In Chico, Blue Room Theater presents Dracula. Adapted from Bram Stoker's Dark Tale, this limited engagement only plays 4 performances. Tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, and afternoons tomorrow and Sunday at 2. Chico's California Regional Theater stages Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Satisfy your musical sweet tooth at the Chico Center for the Arts tonight or tomorrow at 7:30, with matinees tomorrow and Sunday at 2. Tonight at Chico State's Roland Taylor Recital Hall, join the university's musical theater touring troupe for The World Goes Round, an evening of humor, romance, and drama. This musical review features a non-stop parade of hit songs and a story celebrating love, babies, and coffee. The show starts at 7:30. Sunday, the Chico Art Center features retired CSU art history professor Dolores Mitchell speaking about collection highlights of the Oakland Museum of California Arts and the UC Davis Art Museum. The talk begins at 3 o'clock. At the university's Janet Turner Print Museum, the exhibit Know Their Name, Women Printmakers and Shoujo Manga Artists. Turner hours, 11 to 4, Monday through Saturday. 1078 Gallery in Chico presents its 2017 member show. Members of the gallery have created works on the subject of fools and foolishness. Gallery hours, 12:30 to 5:30, Tuesday through Saturday. Paradise's Theater on the Ridge ends its run of Jeeves and Wooster in Come On, Jeeves, a raucous comedy that follows young aristocratic fool Bertie Wooster and his dutiful valet Jeeves. join the fun tonight or tomorrow at 7:30 or at the final performance Sunday at 2. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. It's the birthday today of jazz great Billie Holiday. "We never know what is enough," she remarked, "until we know what's more than enough."
Famous movie music anywhere, the Star Wars theme, and that will be one of the pieces that's going to be played by the North State Symphony tonight in Reading and tomorrow night in Chico. And I have two people involved with that concert. This is the first time these two titans of music in the in the North State have aligned forces. I have Scott Seaton, the conductor of the North State Symphony. Hi, Scott.
Great to be here.
And we also have the managing director of Uncle Dad's Art Collective, Josh Haig.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
When did this idea first come up to collaborate between Uncle Dad's and the North State Symphony?
About a year ago, I was in the middle of the process of planning for the 16-17 season. At that point, I knew that I wanted us to implement a new NSS Pops series. I had Uncle Dad's Art Collective at the corner of my mind, and I thought, okay, well, how could we get these guys involved somehow? Really, this stemmed from the idea of a pop series trying to reach out to many more branches of people than the symphony is already performing to. We want their audience plus our audience. So I thought, hey, why not try this out? You know, I've done many pops concerts in the past with several groups along these lines, and it really just makes sense to have this in the North State. We approached them, we sat down at several meetings and sort of hashed out a theme for this concert.
So the title of this concert is A Splash of Favorites. Where did you come up with the idea of A Splash of Favorites?
Well, when we're introducing this brand new idea, I thought it was best to try to have something on the program that would reach out to as many different types of people as possible. So hopefully, with this concert, there's at least one or two things that everyone is so, oh, I have to go see this. I have to go see the North State Symphony and Uncle Dad's Art Collective because they're playing this. The first half of the concert is just the North State Symphony. We're starting with, for example, Von Suppe's Light Cavalry Overture, which if you ever listened to, let's say, a couple decades ago, Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops Orchestra, mm-hmm. you would have heard all of these lighter classics being played. And I thought, start there and see how far we could go together. And so in the first half, you know, it's everything from that to Henry Mancini to Jesus Christ Superstar to Stardust by Carmichael and Gould to some TV show favorites. And then we're ending the first half with the Star Wars medley. Yeah. So it's going to be big. And it's just an exciting time for me because I've always wanted to conduct this music. So this is great. And then the second half is when they're going to join us. And it's going to be a roller coaster. Maybe Josh can elaborate on that.
Yeah. When we were putting the program together and knew that we wanted to create a set with the symphony, myself and Michael Bone and some other people in the collective were trying to decide where to start, and we thought it would be best to go the exact opposite way you would think and go completely classical. People are expecting us to do something Beatles-related or whatever, but we're actually starting with Debussy's Clair de Lune, an interesting arrangement of it. We were really excited to kind of figure out how that fit with a band and in a more maybe contemporary or pop sensibilities.
So you're going to be a band on stage with the symphony. How many pieces in your band?
Yeah, we're just bringing four people, just a rhythm section, piano, drums, bass, and guitar.
And you have a few vocalists.
That's right. And then in our kind of fashion, we have featured vocalists, some that people who follow our shows might have heard before. We have Nikki Sierra, who sang Bohemian Rhapsody at our Queen show a few years back, and Jesse Naomi, who's been a staple of our shows. We have a couple of new vocalists that are performing from Chico State, and then Michael Bone is also singing a number. when we were trying to figure out how to arrange this material, we decided we wanted the band to be kind of a piece of the symphony, not a featured part. So we worked really hard to make the sonic quality of the symphony really shine through the arrangements we made, as opposed to kind of bringing everything in the kitchen sink like we usually do for our shows. So we brought just the bare essentials. We figured with the 40 people on stage with us, they could handle most of the heavy lifting.
And this is different because, for example, the last show I did like this was in Minot, North Dakota. We collaborated with a group called Post-Traumatic Funk Syndrome, which was essentially a horn band. You know, they had saxophones galore and trumpets, trombones. It was essentially about them, and you really had to listen carefully to hear anything symphony related. What's different with Uncle Dad's Art Collective, and what I really appreciate, is the care that they took in the arrangements to make sure that it was a 50-50 collaborative process in the second half of the show. So you will hear sounds from them, and then you'll hear the orchestra, and it all just kind of come together, and I think that's really exciting.
So Josh, you and Michael and a couple other people from Uncle Dad's actually did the orchestrations for the whole thing. Including orchestrating for the North State Symphony.
That's right.
A huge job?
Yes. I mean, I think when Scott and the North State Symphony approached us and asked if we would want to collaborate, we said, of course, just yes. Obviously, we want to be on stage with the symphony. And then when we sat down to start arranging, we realized we work in a way that's fairly loose. And with these arrangements, we had to not only make them artistically gratifying, like we, you know, really strive to do, and thoughtful and original, but we also had to have them in a way that a symphonic group would appreciate reading them, that Scott could follow and conduct, because, you know, the stakes are a little higher. If we have one wrong note in one part, it kind of throws a train wreck that we can't, as a really small group, you know, we could fix really quickly. But with the whole symphony and with our abbreviated timeline as far as rehearsal schedule, we just had to make sure that it was right out of the gate. There was a couple pull out our hair moments of, oh my gosh, this is kind of overwhelming. But what we found was it's actually an incredibly rewarding experience. Just because the symphony, I mean, you know, the players are of such high caliber and the instrumentation is so wide. This is the first time I've ever arranged for harp or for timpani or percussion, you know, that kind of stuff. And being able to realize that, oh, normally I would just play this on the piano, but this would be amazing if you had a clarinet and the harp and a flute, like the flute section, and thinking about writing the strings in a way that was clever. It was kind of endlessly gratifying. We would just be on our computers sending drafts to each other between Michael and myself and the other guys, and just being super excited about each new revision we would do. Say, hey, look at this. I added this trombone line. Isn't that amazing? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's so cool. So it was a really fun process once we got over the realization that we kind of bit off probably a tiny bit more than we probably should have, but we swallowed it.
You were telling me, Josh, that you and Michael and the collective found out some interesting things that you didn't know before about how instruments are actually supposed to play.
Oh, that's right. Yes. A lot of our training or our ways we interpret music is very removed from the page. I mean, we learn songs and then you memorize them, or you just play the beginning of the phrase on the page and then you kind of improvise. Scott was at a rehearsal following along conducting, and we were going over notes and what we wanted to change before we hit the symphony. And Scott said, hey, you know, you're phrasing that slightly differently than it's on the page. And I realized I'm so used to free reign as far as what's going on. I'm like, oh, you know, if I wanted it that phrasing, you need to write it like that. We learned how to make kind of artistic ideas that we would normally do on the fly, but actually do it on the page. And a lot of like how strings are supposed to sound and how they're supposed to look on a page to get the sound you want, which was really fun. Like, you think about, you know, that one sound you really like in symphonic music, or like some, a good example, like strings kind of sliding up the scale or whatever the concept is. It's like, I can hear that sound in my head, but then how to put that into words on a page that players can understand was really fascinating, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, Scott gave us a set list for the first half, which will be just the North State Symphony. Second act, it's going to be you, Uncle Dad's Art Collective, and the symphony.
That's right.
So tell me what your choices were for the songs and numbers that you're going to be performing.
Yeah, so we went chronologically. That was our very, very loose plan when we picked the songs, was that it had to be chronological. But other than that, we picked songs that we really were kind of dying to arrange and thought would fit this symphonic version. So after the Debussy tune that we're performing, we moved to Duke Ellington. Michael's a big fan of Duke, as am I, so we're doing Sophisticated Lady, which is a dream to arrange. Then we're moving to some Frankie Valli, Can't Take My Eyes Off You. Some of these kind of 50s and 60s tunes, you listen to them a bunch and you've heard them a million times, but you don't realize how cool those songs are. And that was that Frankie Valli tune. You don't realize how cool that song is right out of the gate. So then being able to figure out how to bring that to a symphony was fun. Then we're moving to Simon and Garfunkel and the Carpenters, doing Carpenters Close to You, which I arranged, which was very fun. Then we're doing Stevie Wonder, David Bowie, and the Beach Boys. And then moving to Soundgarden, which is an interesting choice, which was a lot of fun to tackle. Then we're moving to a Daft Punk arrangement.
Which was a pick of mine.
That's right. Scott said, and we kind of were thinking about like, oh my gosh, how are we going to tackle this tune? We worked on an arrangement of Daft Punk's Get Lucky. When we listened to it and started writing, we kind of it was eluding us exactly how that would fit. And then it kind of clicked. And when it did click, we're like, oh my, this is going to be a highlight now. You know, it's funny how that works in a lot of our shows. You know, we start with a number we think is going to be the flop of the night. And then as you put more work and care and thought into it, it turns out to be the standout part. And then we're ending with Tears for Fears' Mad World, which was super fun to arrange, and it was arranged by Ethan Sweat, who's kind of a newcomer to our crew. He's a bass player for the show and also an incredible guitar player and arranger. We kept pretty much the program to exactly what we wanted to play, and luckily, I think it's also things people would like to hear, but it's all kind of our favorite songs of those eras, which is a lot of fun to arrange.
Well, for me, the great thing about Uncle Dad's Art Collective is you keep challenging yourself and topping yourself. I mean, people, I'm sure, have been going to your big concerts at Laxon Auditorium, the last one being Abbey Road, the evening of Beatles tunes.
That's right.
Which was a big hit, as are most of your shows.
Thank you.
Do you like that feeling of challenging yourself and getting bigger and bigger?
When we founded the collective, we thought of it as a way of challenging ourselves to do better work. I mean, the collective kind of was born out of a group of us that have been playing music together for a while. What we were hoping for is by challenging audiences and producing really big works, on the one side, we get to showcase that local performers can put on pretty, what we think is pretty good, high level of art. And then on the other side, it then forces us to hit the ground running and actually see these things through.
I can attest to them wanting to challenge themselves, because when we first started talking about, okay, what would be on a Splash of Favorites program, and my initial thought was like, well, you guys just did an enormously successful Queen tribute. I'd love to just have, you know, one or two of those. And they're like, well, you know, we did that. You know, it's time to try something new. They were eager to, and just chomping at the bit to try all these new and different things. I'm like, all right, well, that's great. Let's do it.
Scott, what does working with a group like Uncle Dad's, as both collaborators and as performers, how does that enlarge the feeling that the whole symphony has of what they're doing?
I think it really puts our mission into context. And, you know, our mission is to reach as many people in the North State region with high quality and diverse music as possible. Our education programs are expanding. Our regular concerts are expanding. We're trying to be the region's orchestra. I don't think we can do that without providing opportunities like this, without collaborating with enormous talents like Uncle Dad's Art Collective. There's so many great things in both, you know, the Chico and Redding communities. I really want to highlight as many of these things as I possibly can in the next several seasons.
So tonight, we start with our first concert in this collaboration. It's in Reading at the Civic Auditorium. It starts at 7:30 tonight. And then tomorrow night, Saturday night, it'll be in Chico at Laxon Auditorium on the Chico State campus. We've been talking with the musical directors from two groups that are collaborating into one concert. We've been talking with Scott Seaton, the musical director of the North State Symphony and the conductor of the North State Symphony, and with Josh Haig, who is the musical director of Uncle Dad's Art Collective. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and I'm so pleased today to be at the James Snidel Gallery, surrounded by 40 years of work by one of Chico's great art treasures, Sal Casa. I'm first speaking with Dean Wilson of the Snidel Gallery, who had the pleasure of hanging the show.
The pieces came in a large group, about 25 pieces. As I was laying the show out, I realized some of the ones that I wanted to be in certain places actually belonged in certain groups that matched more their style. He had painted some in the 60s, some in the 70s, and then later into the 80s. The early 60 pieces are very realistic looking and have an Andrew Wyeth style to them. Sal had mentioned that that was a major influence of his. By grouping them together, it almost has a feel that there are different artists working at the time. You have this large body of one artist's work that has changed style through the years is what's making it more interesting for me, because you get to see where he's pushing himself into new areas to keep it challenging, yet something is still holding through. It's been a good learning curve for me.
I'm turning now to Lois Perkins, herself a marvelous artist, and had the pleasure of studying with Sal very early in her career. You said you came to Chico in 1974.
That first summer, I took a figure drawing class from Sal at Chico State. Sal teaches the mechanics. If I'm painting, I'm saying, Sal Casa, light, dark, warm, cool, less is more. And if you look around the gallery, that's how he paints. Don't be beguiled by the object. He would start with the object, and he does a lot of preliminary sketches, a lot of study, and then reduces. I always look at artists and I think, well, how are they in the darks? And Sal Casa's darks are rich. You may see it as black, but they're rich with color.
I'm turning now to Reed Applegate, one of Chico's great treasures as a collector. You spotted Sal's quality very early on.
Sal was one of the reasons why I started to collect Northern California artists. I didn't have the pleasure of having him as an instructor or anything, because I had already gone through the Chico State art program before he really got into doing any teaching. I just was so attracted by his use of color, his way of brushstroke, reminding me of the richness of Elmer Bischoff and some of the Bay Area figurative people. The use of color and the way he used spatial concepts. Also, when he started using the lettering in his work that added another dimension to it, not only just regular words. I have one called La Zingarella where he just used the vowels. And I said, why those? He said, just another element in the work. He was one of the motivating factors for me, buying Northern California art.
And you were saying too, Dean, that you were particularly struck by Verdi in three of his pieces.
I believe that goes back to the Italian lineage with him. He is Sicilian, raised in Manhattan.
Well, I know that when Sal moved to Cape with his family and was out there for quite a while, he would listen to opera, paint in the evenings, and was inspired by his heritage.
You were particularly struck by color in his work.
The colors just draw you in. Even if they are dark, it reminds me of something like Robert Motherwell did with his Spanish Elegy work. You get that same feel, at least I do in some respects, with Sal's work.
I know he was influenced by Motherwell, and you can see it in a number of the pieces here. You cannot but be seduced by his brushwork. When somebody has a painting and there's a whole blank area, Sal Casa puts in brushwork and underpainting that is so seductive that you just are wooed. And it may be a huge area. Sal always taught areas of void, areas of activity. He balances all the techniques of painting, and it looks so easy.
Let's get back to Sal's color, because he uses the colors of the Italian flag quite often. In folk belief, the green stands for the meadows, the white for the Alps, and guess what the red stands for? The bloody history of trying to achieve independence over...
I was going to say Garibaldi.
That's right, that's right. In fact, one of the words Macchioli has to do with the 19th century artists who were very politically involved and did fight with Garibaldi, at least some of them did. What else would we like to add?
Well, he does make reference to a lot of artists right in the works themselves, putting their names in there and so on. He's done one honoring women artists and one men artists also. He has such a wide range of interest in knowledge and love.
He's a historian.
Yes.
A painter historian. And love shows through his work because he's always reflecting back and moving forward.
You were saying, and I just must bring this up because I want you to do it, that you're going to make some t-shirts.
I always joke, I want to make a t-shirt that says, because this is a classic Sal, your lights are as light as your darks are dark. It means when you're a beginning painter, you don't just put yellow in to make it lighter. You put darks in to make the rest of the painting light. And if you look at Sal's work, the darks are the core.
Well, it seems to me this is a wonderful opportunity for anyone who is a painter. You can get one lesson after another from this show.
Come on down throughout April. The show will be up for the rest of the month, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 9 to 2.
There may be just one or two people who cannot place where your gallery is.
Just off the corner of 4th Street and Wall, downtown. But what I like to add is what you said, where it's across the street from the large hand sculpture. 254 East 4th Street. It's old Victorian, two-story house. The lights might not be on, but we're here.
Thank you so much, all three of you.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it anytime after 3:30 Friday online at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio. Thank you.